Welcome to the RSP Cast. This is episode number 86. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, and joining me today is Ross Cooper. You can find Ross Cooper on Twitter at Gorilla M-Y. S-C-L-E-S, Gorilla Mysles, I would say it would be how that works. Ross is a skills acquisition coach, and we're going to talk today about something that I notice a lot. It's like you ever get on social media or Twitter and you know various places, and you see these videos of people who doing these, you know, training, like Le'Veon Bell training, or, you know, or Odell Beckham doing his training, or, you know, a variety of different, you know, pro players running through cones and doing different footwork drills, and you know, pass defenders doing what they do, and just wondering, you know, what to make of all of that. So Ross is a skills acquisition coach. I thought I'd let him explain what that is a little bit more, and then we kind of delve deep into, you know, what it is that we're looking at on social media and what maybe we should also be looking for. So with that long intro, Ross, thanks for joining me today and welcome to the show.
Man, thanks for having me, Matt. I know we've had some really good discussions privately, so I'm excited to be able to kind of chop it up and, you know, maybe share a few things that make people think or make people see things a different way, and, you know, we'll go from there, bro.
Exactly. So can you tell our listeners what a skills acquisition coach is and what it is you focus on?
Really, my background is coming from coaching, both high school and the JUCO level. And then the skill acquisition stuff, really what we're trying to do is just, you know, you can have a guy who is an extremely fast guy or a guy who jumps high. We're really trying to just build skill. So we're trying to take all the different abilities that are out there, all the different kind of abilities that a player could have, and we're trying to put it into skill where it can be used on the actual football field in a plethora of different ways in every situation that could be faced versus any type of opponent, any type of weather. So really, I mean, probably a good example of it is we could use a wide receiver. We're trying to make it where, you know, the guy's just not a fast guy. The guy's just not a guy who can jump high. Of course, everyone's going to have a different set of abilities, both God-given and both things that he's worked on to achieve and gain. But we're trying to take all those things and we're trying to make it skill in the sense that whatever problem the defense may be throwing his way, whatever defender he may be playing, whatever may be going on with the field conditions, the weather, everything else that goes on in your football environment, we're trying to build skill that can always be used. So really, long story short, you're trying to build solutions. So that player can have so many different solutions that he can tap into. Doesn't mean he's always going to quote-unquote make the play or it's going to be perfect. But it means no matter what's thrown his way, he can at least tap into something to find some type of solution to use in that play, in that moment, in that time, and in that space.
That makes perfect sense. You know, you're taking a raw material and you're refining it in as many different ways as you possibly can. I mean, it's like, you know, I often use a lot of musical references on this show, and it's like someone who has a really great sound, but still, you know, when they're going to play, there's a variety of different phrases that they want to learn, different types of things about the environment that they're going to be playing in. You know, there's certain rhythms that you would play in a salsa mm-hmm. band different than you'd play in a rock band, you know. And 100%. So you're learning about the genre in terms of the different environments that you're going to be in, playing at high tempo, low tempo, varying tempos, you know, all that exactly. kind of stuff. And you see that on the football field. So
exactly. It's really all about just the changes, man, because even when we feel like we're in control of something, even if you're, you know, we can use, just like you said, a musician, he may be in the middle of a performance and everything is going perfect, and he's practiced that song thousands upon thousands of times, and he knows he could play it with his eyes closed in his sleep. And, you know, even in that moment, it's going to be different than when he may have practiced that song 15 minutes ago backstage.
Yes.
So it's really just making sure, I think the perfect word to just explain skill in general is you just want to have the ability to adapt to whatever it is that's being thrown. If I can adapt, then I can still perform.
Yeah, and I love how you said kind of play through changes, because that's that kind of is a link between both music and any performance sport. So when we watch, you know, I'm sitting here on Twitter, you know, and I program my stuff, and then I'll come at some point during the day and look at, you know, check in and see what people have questions or what kind of responses I'm getting, and look at what other people I follow posting. And I'll see all these videos where, like, people are going through and, you know, they're kind of showing who the clients are they're working with. And they're, you know, and I see these guys running through these different drills. And one of the things that's come to mind to me is some of that stuff I look at and go, okay, they're trying to get muscle memory going with a certain type of technique with their feet or their hips or different types of movements. And maybe it's to get a running back acclimated to the idea of he needs to shorten his stride, learn how to shorten and lengthen his stride on command at different points, and to be able to explode through those changes of direction, or to minimize movement and make efficient movement in certain scenarios. And I'll watch some of it and go, okay, that makes sense. And then I'll watch some things and I look at it and I'll see things where I go, you know, they're not, the cues that they're giving for them maybe to to make that determination might not be as accurate as they could be, or, you know, different things like that. But that's from someone who, you know, like myself, who watches a lot of film and watches, you know, and observes how players, trying to observe how players make diagnoses of things. What, you know, what are some things when you watch these videos? I mean, what are things that you like seeing that maybe the public, when the public's looking at it, how do you kind of discern the, you know, someone kind of hyping their business where everyone's doing that to a degree, which is fine, but discern that from the value of, you know, getting good value out of that from just pure hype?
I think, you know, and let me start off by saying this, because this is a topic that you have a lot of guys, they get infuriated over because they feel like you're attacking them. First off, I don't have all the answers. Second of all, like you said, everyone's going to do what they feel is right for them, whether it's the intention of, you know, just business side of it, whether it's the intention of, you know, I want to be close to X player because it's going to help my rep. Some guys are in it where they, you know, it's really because they want to spend time with that guy, and they want that guy to walk away where they can turn on the film, you know, come fall and he's improved. So, you know, I don't have all the answers. For me, I kind of like to always begin with it, and I say, like, what are the eyes doing? You know, if anyone who knows me or may follow me or we've had a conversation, you'll know, like, for me, I'm a big perception action guy. Because if we blindfold a player on the field, it doesn't matter how many times he's practiced this cone drill, this ladder drill, running his routes, doing his swim move. If he's blindfolded, he is not going to win the battle that he's facing.
Right.
He's not going to be able to adapt. You know what I mean? It sounds very simple, but in this day and age, sometimes common sense isn't so common anymore. So for me, I start everything off with, I first say to myself, okay, it starts with transfer and it ends with transfer. Where is this going to be used at? Because the game itself, the game will dictate what's needed. The game is going to show you what problems you're going to have to face. You know, sport is a problem-solving game. So then I say, what are the demands of the sport? And then what are the demands of that player's actual position? Like, what is needed of him?
Right.
In a singular sense, what is needed of him as a DB, as a wide receiver, as a running back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what is the demands of his position within, you know, the sport he's playing, within the team concept, within the scheme, all those other things. So for me, I really like to begin, okay, it starts with transfer, ends with transfer. The game does not need us to add all this stuff to it. The game does not need us to subtract all this stuff. I mean, it's a recipe, and the game will give you all the ingredients you need. Doesn't need you adding sugar to this and adding salt to that. So I take it from there, and then I say, you know, it has to start with the eyes. Are we putting players in a position where they're going to be using their perception, where they're going to be using their eyes, so then they can attach their movement to that? Because from that, you have your eyes. Your eyes are going to scan. Your eyes are going to see. Your eyes are going to present to you, this is what's coming my way. This is the problem being faced. And then you get to decision make. Then you get to move. Then you get to adapt. You get to do all those things. And, like, you know, that's really what people may hear the term perception action. Now, I've had it before. That's a crazy term. Really, all it is it's seeing and moving.
Yeah.
So you're perceiving to act, and then you're acting to perceive, and it's just a cycle that's going to continue every single step. So for me, I look at a lot of these drills, and, of course, like me and you have spoken about before.
Right.
You know, there's some guys that have their intentions are different than other guys. You know, we can't speak for anybody's heart. But at the same time, I like to look at every single drill and say, how is this going to transfer? And then we get into, is this something that is really going to improve this player's decision-making, his perceptual abilities, his attunement with the whole football environment? And I know people hear that term and they're, well, what does that mean? This is all the things that are going on. There's 22 players on that field at one time. You may have your one-on-one matchup, but there's 22 players on that field. Everybody's impacting everyone in one way or the other. You have the weather at play. You have the field at play. You have the stress of maybe that player during the week had a hard week in practice, and he knows if I make a mistake in the first drive, I could be benched. This could be my career on the line. You could have a player out there during a game who's going through drama at home, and his mind's in another place. You have the fans. So all those things coming into play, I like to sit back and say, okay, is this drill that I'm seeing, whether it's on social media, whether it's, you know, maybe a video of a practice clip or whatever, is this drill something that this player is going to take where he can use his eyes? Is it training his eyes? Is it training his decision-making? Is it going to transfer? If it's not, then all of a sudden we get into something that's very common nowadays, and it becomes just correlation without causation, where it doesn't mean, you know, let's throw a player's name out, Odell, you know, A.B., Saquon. You can use any star player in any sport, you know, LeBron James, anybody. You can take that star and you can put him through any workout that you want. And there's a chance, no matter what workout you put him in, at some point, if you want to bad enough, you can watch what he does on the court, on the field, on the baseball diamond, and you can then say, ah, that's what we were working towards. Now, is it really? Is that really the reason that what he's doing now in his sport of play, is that why he's doing that? Or do we have to sit back and say, you know what? He was a God-gifted athlete with an insane athletic ability, with some insane skill that's already starting to come out. Was it really me? And I've had this discussion with myself. Is it really me? Or was, you know, did really what I do, just I just made him sweat and I put him through some drills? So for me, man, I start and I stop. Transfer, context of what's going on, context of the sport. So I ask three questions, really. I say, what is transfer? I say, what is context? And then I say, is this something that is going to be able to build the skill like we spoke about, with his perception coming into play, with his decision-making coming into play, and all those things that follow that, his movement, his authentic and individual movement. And then I sit back and I say to myself, you know what? He's going to be playing an opponent. And if it's a professional guy, that opponent gets paid to beat you just like you get paid to beat him. If it's a college guy, that opponent's practiced all week. He's on scholarship to beat you, just like you're supposed to beat him, all the way down to be a middle school kid. That guy across from you is trying to do the same thing that you're trying to do to him. He's trying to win that matchup. He's trying to win that game. So for me, every single drill, man, I just kind of sit back and I say, all right, is this kind of in the context of the sport? Is this in the context of this player's individual position? Is this in the context of, is this really going to transfer? And then, is this something that is building his eyes, building his perception, building his decision-making, building his solution, giving him solutions on top of solutions? Is it teaching him to adapt? Is he all those different things?
Yeah, I think that's a terrific overview of really the space right there. So, you know, you talked about what, you know, kind of separating the salt and sugar from what's really nutritious. You know, mm-hmm. do you mind maybe if we go into maybe a couple of positions, like say either whether it's wide receiver or defensive back or running back, and
go for it, man.
And let's say start with wide receiver. What are some things that you could look at that, you know, that the average fan who may be on Twitter may be looking at, you can say, this will help, these are drills or these are particular types of exercises that will be helpful, like these are things
for sure. I mean, for me, we can start with wide receivers. For me, man, it's about, okay, we're gonna look at what does this guy have to do. His job is to catch the football. Of course, his job is to block as well, all those things. He's supposed to catch the football, so that means a lot of his is going to be running routes. A lot of his is going to be dealt with deception within running routes. I'm trying to show you one thing, trying to show you like I'm pushing you deep. I want to get the DB to open his gate. I want to get him to bell so then I can toy with him. I could do whatever I want. course, it changes, you know, with different spots on the field because spacing will be different. But for me, like with a wide receiver, I really want to grow the ability to adapt. So if he's playing versus maybe it's a guy, maybe if it's an Xavier Rhodes, who's a guy who likes to put his hands on him. I know Sean Miska does a lot with Xavier. You know, to put his hands on him, likes to get physical, likes to use some of his strength component, which is a part of his skill. It's not all of his skill, but it's a part of his skill. You know, how are we going to adapt that? How are we going to counteract that? How can we even use this player's, maybe his speed, maybe his strength, how can we now use that against him? So how can we take his quote-unquote strength, how can we use that against him? So I like to put those guys in situations where, you know, even if it's running, let's say, a 10-yard out, well, you can run that out all day long. I know I'm going to hit my foot here, I'm going to stick, I'm going to get out. You see a lot of guys that are going to be doing, you know, some of these more obstacle courses and all these ladder drills. Well, at the end of the day, like I said, that DB standing across from you, he's getting paid to beat you just like you're getting paid to beat him. So I love to put wide receivers in situations where they have to start now adapting. Even if it's the simplest thing like a 10-yard out, let's put you in situations where maybe the DB has jammed you a little bit at the line, where you're no longer in a situation where you're dictating. Let's allow you now to adapt, then dictate, then adapt again, then dictate again. Let's put you in a situation where maybe you're supposed to stick that foot on step number 10 and you get into step number 9 and you look up and something's changed. So now you know on that step 10, you got to get your break because the quarterback's putting the ball in the air. He's depending on you to be where you need to be. Okay, let's just pick it up from right there. Let's put you in a situation where this stuff has changed and now you have to find some type of solution to stick the foot and get there. Let's put you in a situation where maybe you're off balance. I like to do this with running backs, DBs, and wide receivers. Let's start out the scenario, because that's really all I'm doing. I'm trying to facilitate a learning environment. I'm trying to facilitate a scenario so then they can start adding solutions. So let's put you in a situation where you're not in control, where you're maybe a little bit off balance, where maybe you're not able to get to your spot like you wanted to, like you did through walkthroughs, like you did in practice every day. So then all of a sudden you start out in an environment, in a mindset where, okay, I got to adapt. I got to figure something out right now. Because then once we get into the game, that's going to happen. You know, it doesn't matter. Man, it doesn't matter if you're Jerry Rice. You look at these guys who are just all-time greats, a guy like Barry Sanders, a guy like Deion, and people sit back and they think like, wow, Barry just dominated. Deion just dominated. Jerry Rice is, Randy Moss is. No, their dominating ability came from their ability to adapt because whatever was thrown at them, all of a sudden they were able to, on a drop of a dime, okay, I can do this. I can do that. So I really like to put wide receivers in the same for running backs and DBs. I like to put them in situations that really may be uncomfortable. And then over time, we can become comfortable being uncomfortable. And then, hey, when, like I said, when you're in that situation in a game and some crap hits the fan, you don't have to just, what happens now? You can start finding ways to still get to where you need to get to still use your technique, because I know a lot of people hearing this will then say, well, hold on, if you just practice your technique enough times and your technique's perfect, that's what you want. Well, technique's a means. It's part of the means to the end solution. It's part of the means to solve the problem. But then even your technique is going to be in a situation where you want that to be able to adapt and change to whatever you're seeing. I mean, and that's why I kind of, even with that, I like to have the mindset with the running backs, the wide receivers, the DBs, to go just right off the Bruce Lee quote, the highest technique is to have no technique. My technique is a result of your technique. My movement is a result of your movement. So I love to put guys in situations where maybe something isn't perfect. Maybe something isn't going the way they planned. And then all of a sudden, we can start building solutions on top of solutions. Instead of just saying, okay, there's a cone here. There's, you know, maybe a trash can there. Maybe there's a ladder there. Maybe there's even a coach standing here. And, okay, I'm telling you, I'm going to point to the right. When I point to the right, you cut right. Well, that's all great. You're going through these change of direction things, but it's all controlled. So what happens in the game where all of a sudden, you know, Barry Sanders comes up on, there's two linebackers filling the gaps. You have a DB crashing off the corner. You have a safety coming downhill. Everyone on the defense is staring at Barry, knowing we got to stop him. Now what?
Yeah, and now nobody's pointing to Barry where to go.
100%, and there's no script. You know, you have your plays. You know, hey, this the player's supposed to hit the A gap. Now, what happens when Barry runs up into the A gap, and the offensive line has been pushed back, and there's a linebacker already filling it? Well, you got to do something. You can't just turn around and toss the ball to the ref, call timeout, and say, "Hey, bro, it didn't go the way I planned." You know what I mean? So, yeah. With wide receivers, I love to put them in situations where it just makes them uncomfortable. Situations where they have to adapt, and then just put them in spots where, like I said, it could be as simple as, hey, we're just working on some of these angles. We're working on a little 10-yard out. Maybe we're working on a slant. But I'm going to give you so many different looks. We're going to change so many things up. You have to start finding multiple ways to get to the spot you know you have to get to, because you know the ball's coming out. Yeah. And you got to be there.
Yeah, and that's I really like where you're going with this, because I mean, a good example, I mean, this week I've done a few pieces on my site, and I had a couple of examples of things you're talking about, because, say, I did a piece on, you know, one piece I did was with Xavier Rhodes on Dante Pettis last year, and then another piece the day before was with Marcus Valdes-Scantling against the Rams corner, and the Dante Pettis play, you could kind of see that he had an idea of what he wanted to do before the play, but when Pettis jammed him, he didn't quite have a solution in time. He thought of one, but it looked like he didn't quite make it to his break point in time, and the ball was possibly thrown, he was about a step or two too late, and the ball arrived a little bit wide of him, and Xavier Rhodes was able to make the play. And it was a play where it involved him kind of making a stick move, a hard plant, and then using his body to kind of fake in an exaggerated fashion in one direction and then break on the slant. Well, you know, when he came out of that stick, he kind of tried to avoid or come over the top of Rhodes and turn through and kind of bring that in, or that outside arm kind of over the top, and he didn't quite get through that cleanly. And then in contrast, you had a guy like Valdes-Scantling last year who, you know, also was running a move where he kind of gave a stick and then worked inside and then up the field. He didn't run a slant, but the release method, it began the same way with that hard stick and head fake. But he knew that with the defender getting his hips turned and his gait turned, that the defender was going to be high. And he had already kind of worked out well that when a defender reaches high for him, that instead of trying to go over the top of him, he had already figured out and learned that maybe I should come up underneath where the defender, I'm going to enhance, kind of further detract that defender's balance and be in a fluid situation where I could work under and through and have minimal contact made other than how I initiated it. And now he's like upfield and past the defender and catching a touchdown pass. And it was like, go ahead.
What you just said, I think kind of sums it all up perfectly, is really what I'm trying to do. And when I watch a lot of these drills, you know, whether it's on Twitter, wherever it may be, I really kind of just sit back and I say, okay, is it versatility, variability, and adaptability? Because like you just explained, and it could be, we can just use Xavier Rhodes as an example. He can line up versus the same wide receiver two plays in a row, and the same wide receiver can run a corner route. And both times it's going to be completely different. Because even if everything seems like it's the same, even if it may appear like while watching the game as a fan, maybe standing on the sideline as a scout or a coach, maybe watching the All-22, you know, later in the week, it can look the same, but something still has changed. And something's still changing within every single step by the wide receiver, by the DB. So, like, exactly what you were just explaining is, it's really trying to just make sure that you have, you know, the versatility and your variability and your adaptability. And then all of a sudden it becomes that situation where, you know, I say it sometimes, but you can say it many different ways. It's your kind of skill tool belt.
Yeah.
Where I can just, you know, I can grab a screwdriver this time. I can grab a hammer next time. I can have 1,000 different screwdrivers to choose from where I can use to tighten that bolt, unloosen the bolt. And then all of a sudden you're in a situation where, okay, hey, I can at least find something. I can find something in my skill to try to make this play. Now, of course, we both know it's not going to happen every time. But you start looking at some guys who are doing it, and it's for me, and you had a conversation a few weeks back, actually. And it was about a particular player, and there were some drills online. And we had got to talking, and I mean, the guy is a legit, he is a legit player. If his, yes. if his career continues to go the way it's going, he'll probably be a Hall of Fame player. Now, the question has to be said, even after that, let's say it all goes well, God willing, he stays healthy, continues having the success he's having. Some of the stuff he was doing, is it going to lead to him becoming the highest level of skill, the highest level of mastery that he could be? Even if he gets into the Hall of Fame, then can we sit back and we can say, you know what? Could he have even been better?
Right.
If he would have spent his... So, I mean, for me, I look at that a lot and I say, hey, is this drill going to reach every bit of what this player could be? Sometimes, yes. Shoot, as you know, sometimes you see stuff and it's just, nah, it's not going to do it.
Yeah, because, like, sometimes what you'll see is, you know, a good example is, you know, you talked about the running back, you know, where they show the running back making decisions to cut one way or the other into a certain gap. And, you know, one of the things that I would often notice is, well, you know, reaching an arm out or a noodle or a, you know, or something mm-hmm. in a way may seem like it's giving some sort of, you know, some sort of environmental cue to let them know where to go or where them how to react. But even that, the cue has to be thought of better sometimes. Sometimes these cues aren't realistic. Like you talked about, you want it to be realistic. You know, well, you need, instead of like a, you know, an arm pointing out, what you need to see is, what are the running backs, what are they taught to read? They're taught to read either the
That's
hips
right.
or the helmet. So if you're
right.
giving them a different body part or something that doesn't resemble a helmet or the hips, then you're teaching, then you're asking them to respond to cues that they're not supposed to be looking at, or, you know, it's not going to be ingrained well. Because when you talk about getting the tool belt and using these different tools, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not going to work every time. But if it works once or twice in a game, that may be a difference in that ball game. And so,
exactly.
And so you've got to develop those tools enough that you have enough of these different tools that you can react as it without at the speed of instinct, without thinking, because you've it's under your feet, it's under your fingers, you know you're responding to it in a way, just in the way of like martial arts training, where it's become a part of you, and it doesn't always work as you expected it to work, you know, but you found a way to work through it and maybe do something that you didn't even train yourself to do, but because you've learned these different tools and worked with them well enough that you've been able to find a secondary option or an alternate to counter the counterattack, you know, and a guy
well,
who's
it's what,
go ahead.
What you said, my bad, not to cut you off, Matt, it just popped into my mind. What you're talking about right now, really, it comes down to the chaos around you shouldn't override the calm within you.
Yes.
So you should be able to be in a situation where it's a great point that you made about cues, because you can have a guy, and let's just say he's a guy, he's out there dodging. I mean, we've seen everything. You see cones being thrown. You see trash cans. You see guys throwing basketball. I mean, it happens in basketball, too. I saw a video the other day. It had a guard dribbling, and then all of a sudden the dude was, like, throwing objects at him. Well, unless you're planning to go play professional dodgeball
right.
where they're throwing stuff at you, that's not going to transfer. It may, you know, you may tell yourself it is while it's happening. Now, let's take even a simple drill. Let's take a guy. Let's just take a running back. And the running back's going through he's going through a drill. Maybe he's got a set of cones. He's dodging. He's cutting all these things. Now, within that drill, because we talk about transfer, but people need to realize not just good transfers, but bad transfers too.
Yes.
So everything that you're doing is going to transfer. So now you've reached a point where you're going to be in the game. And maybe you take that outside sweep and the outside linebacker comes crashing down, corner's fighting off his block. Maybe he's not able to get off his block, but he's at least able to push the wide receiver into your space now too. So you're used to doing all these things where we'll call it change of direction-wise, pre-planned movement-wise. And now all of a sudden you're in that game and you don't have the perceptual ability to look where you need to look. Maybe your eyes are so used to your body making your moves, and then you look up for your next move, you're not being led by your eyes now. So it's, you know, like the point you made is the same with the DB. You see guys doing DB drills all the time, nonstop. I mean, it's probably become one of the most popular things, that and running back drills and wide receiver drills on Twitter. Okay, so you could take a DB. You have a guy who's doing his backpedaling drills. He's cutting. He's doing his coverage drills. All this time, he's not focusing on where his eyes need to focus. Okay, let me read the hips. Then when I'm in coverage, let me read the changing joint angle of the hip and thigh, because if that wide receiver is about to go into a sprint, if I'm going to sprint, my thigh and my hip are going to do something different than if I'm going to sink and I'm going to drop and I'm going to cut into a transition. Well, now, even though you may have had the best intentions and you're going through, you know, all these different drills and you're drilling, and sometimes you're drilling and you're killing the guy, now all of a sudden he's got into a game. His feet are used to doing something, so his feet are just going to start reacting and going crazy on their own. He's not going to know where to place his eyes. So yeah. Now it doesn't even matter how athletic he is. He's already playing behind the eight ball because his eyes are going to fail him. And like you said, he could still be within arm's reach. He may not even be out of phase. He may legit still be in phase. But that ball can still be caught, because in that moment that he did not know where to look, because if I'm not sure where to look and my eyes go bad and then my movement can't follow my eyes, that could be the difference between a pick that can change the game for the defense. Could be the difference between a big third and five catch, which allows, you know, the winning drive to happen.
Yeah, and what you talk about is so funny, because I can imagine exactly the right way to do this with a specific player. But I'm going to transition. Before I lead into him, I'm going to talk about the fact that you mentioned using the eyes to look at the hips as a good example for that position. And you had a post, you know, on Twitter yesterday where you showed a picture of Jalen Ramsey in practice, and he's staring across from a Ravens wide receiver, and he's got a reflective visor on. And you pointed out that look at what's in his visor sight line, and it was the hips of the wide receiver, mm-hmm. and the wide receiver was looking back at his hips, and that's how you read it. Well, what's interesting about that to me was Jalen Ramsey, as we know, is one of the excellent cornerbacks at being able to, you know, work solutions and play physically, and also be able to work, you know, change direction, but work with receivers in a very exacting mm-hmm. sort of way. And a receiver that I remember watching last year where it was a one-on-one matchup that I watched that was like watching a great title fight, was watching Jalen Ramsey and DeAndre Hopkins last year. And they're
amazing.
Yeah, it was an amazing game, because you watch Hopkins, and if there's a wide receiver in the game that everyone should watch when it comes to how well his eyes are trained, he's got to be at the top of the list, because when you watch him, even against guys not like Ramsey, you'll see him off the line of scrimmage and someone tries to jam him, and where the accuracy of his hand placement to strike a mm-hmm. defender, or to be able to get leverage, whether it's pushing a shoulder while he's on the move at the end of his break, or whether it's when he's trying to swat down and he's swatting at the kind of the crook of the elbow, and, you know, or at the crook at the wrist, and being able mm-hmm. to make some and get maximum leverage, the accuracy of that placement is something that is just a joy to watch, because every movement he makes is maximized. And when a defender the caliber of Ramsey he's facing, who's able to counter him or to put a, you know, do something very effective, he's still able to figure out a way to where, even if it looks ugly, even if it looks like they're wrestling each other, somehow the ball still winds up in his hand, and it's clean. Yeah. And it's like when you watch guys like him or T.Y. Hilton, they are so solution-oriented, and a lot of it is their eyes and how their hands and feet react to what their eyes are seeing.
It really, man, I hate to quote Bruce Lee again, but, I mean, it really is. It's the situation where when he says, be like water. If you put water in a cup, you know, let me rephrase this real quick. If you think about, let's think about what water is before I even say the quote.
Right.
Water can find the smallest crack in. So, you know, you could have a downpour, and you could do everything in your power. You put your bags down, you put your sandbags down, you tape it up, and water is still going to find the smallest little crack that it could find. It's still going to find its way in. And before you know it, all that water is going to be crashing up against all the little things. It still go find its way in. So just like you were just talking about Hopkins and the Ramsey battle last year, it was like a heavyweight fight, because each one, it was just a constant situation of adapting versus adapting, because guys were like, all right, I know you're legit. You know I'm legit. We're going to keep fighting until I find even the smallest crack, which may not even be a crack that was apparent to the naked eye, and then boom, as soon as I do, I'm pouncing on it. So then it becomes just like the Bruce Lee quote, be formless, be shapeless. If you put water into a cup, it becomes a cup. If you put water into a bottle, it becomes a bottle. If you put it into a teapot, it becomes a teapot. It can flow, it can crash. Now, people out there may hear that and be like, well, what's he talking about? Just think about it. Think about water, and then think about what these players are trying to do versus each other. They're really just looking for whatever it is. If you're the teapot, quote unquote, right now, I'm going to become the teapot. If you're the cup, I'm going to become the cup. I'm going to continuously find a way to try to get at you, try to beat you, even if it's perfect coverage. Because some of those catches that DeAndre had, Ramsey was all over him.
Yes.
And I remember having a conversation with a good friend of mine in Dallas, Coach White, and we were talking about it, and we were kind of laughing, because you would kind of see videos pop up a few days after that, or even during the game, and you know, God forbid a DB gives up a catch, because suddenly he's trash
right.
in social media land. I mean, it wasn't some of those catches that he had, the coverage was absolutely amazing, and DeAndre was just kept pulling out, let me pull out this hammer, this drill, this screwdriver, this nail, let me pull out solution after solution,
let me
after
put
solution
some duct
to
tape together on two
exactly.
different tools and create a new tool, you know. It was crazy.
Yep. And that's all it was. And it was, and there were plays at the same time where Ramsey got the betterment of it. So it was like, I think to go back, just for us to circle all the way back to when we started this conversation, and you said, like, what do I think when I look at these drills? Or what am I trying to do when I get out of, when I put a player in a learning environment? Really, I go back, there's a guy, Marco Sullivan, brilliant dude. And he had a quote that it said, are we trying to develop learners in the game or just of the game?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, man, Where does that player, where does Ramsey have to perform? Where does the wide receiver, where does Hopkins have to perform? They have to do it in the game and in that moment in the game, where there's a lot more going on in that moment than any of us are even going to be able to understand, because we're not those guys. We're not in their head. We're not in their body. We don't know what they're seeing. We don't know what they're thinking. So it's really like each drill, because that's your goal. Your goal is to get to that point where Hopkins and Ramsey battled it out. And it was just a heavyweight boxing match where it was just punches being thrown one after another, and guy took one punch, dodged the next, got hit with the next. Are we developing learners in the game, or are we just developing learners of the game? Because there's a big difference.
Yes, and what's interesting about this is when you look at that matchup, and when you can appreciate it from the standpoint and perspective that you have as a coach who's trying to teach people to do these types of things, you also develop, I think, a broader and deeper understanding of these interactions that are going on. Because one of the things, you know, you mentioned some of the people, you know, on social media kind of trashing Jalen Ramsey, you know, and not appreciating what was going on there fully. I also had a conversation with someone who I kind of debated on there, who had talked about being a coach of defensive backs at the high school level, and saying, well, mm-hmm. you know, DeAndre Hopkins manhandled Jalen Ramsey, and it's not really fair, and it's, you know, all these different things. And I had written this piece kind of from the point of view of, you know, the great thing about these two players is that they both understood the gray area of the game, because there's the rules of the game, and then there's the unwritten rules of the game. And sometimes those unwritten rules, that environment changes. Just like you play differently on grass that's slick than you do where mm-hmm. it's maybe kind of hard scrabble dirt. You play differently mm-hmm. when it's a windy day than you do on a sunny or a cloudy day, and where the sun's shining into what side of the stadium. You adapt to those types of things. Now, there's mm-hmm. there's no rule breaking going on, but you can stretch it a little further and understand that, yes, we want to teach our 7 and 8 year old Pop Warner kids and our junior high and high school kids to play within the rules. But as you get to the higher levels of football, there are points where the best defensive backs or the best receivers know, this ref, I know who I'm playing with, and I know who the official is, and I've studied the official to know he calls these tightly, he calls these loosely. These things he doesn't see all that often. So watch these two guys, and like some of, you know, you watch some of them, and a coach from a purist standpoint might just go, well, it was outside the rules, and just looking at it literally, I wouldn't teach my kids any of that because it's just not right. And then, you know, but on the other hand, you look at the higher levels and have to understand that there's more gray area and complexity, just like as there is in life. And yep. you don't want people to be immoral, but at the same time, you understand, okay, these are the pushing points, and my job is to be as close to the breaking point as possible and get away with it without anything being called. Or if it does mm-hmm. get called, maybe that also helps me, because if I can get it called once, it's going to get called
That's
more.
Right.
So
there you go.
Yeah. And so within the game is also part of adapting.
It really comes down to it's repetition without repetition within every single step.
Yeah.
Like every single breath, because it's constantly changing. And Sean Miska is a guy who it was years ago, and like I was starting to kind of change my mindset towards things, and you know, I kept blowing his phone up, trying to pick his brain. And he said to me, it's a Bernstein quote, and he said, "It's repeating the problem, not repeating the solution." And I know a lot of people will hear that and be like, "Whoa, are you saying we shouldn't get out there and take reps? And what do you mean? You're just out, it's chaos." Well, no. What you're doing is you're having to really face the fact that every single time you take a rep in practice, doesn't matter what it is, you take a rep in drills. A lot of the drills me and you were talking about that we both seen, good and bad. Like every single rep's going to be different. Even if you think it's not, it's still different, because if that's the narrative you want to use, then as a coach or as a trainer, you have to now accept the responsibility to say to yourself, when that player makes a mistake on the field, I don't even want to call it a mistake, because many times a mistake could turn into the best play the player's ever had. When that player doesn't reach his intention of, I'm winning this battle, I'm catching this ball, I'm stopping this ball from being caught, I'm making this tackle, X, Y, and Z for every other position. When that doesn't happen, now you need to take ownership as a coach and a player and say, it's not his fault. It's my fault, because if it was just, we can just perfect rep it over and over and over and over again, then all I got to do is I got to take responsibility and say, I should have spent 30 more minutes doing this drill. Because if we would have spent 30 more minutes doing this drill, that would have never happened. But then you got to, like it goes back to, you got two people on the field going against each other. You got 22 people, you got 11 on 11. Well, if that's the case, guess what? Nobody's ever catching the ball. No one's ever scoring.
Right.
Like, it's ridiculous. So, I mean, it really comes down to just that bursting quote that it's repeating the problem, not repeating the solution, because then all of a sudden you can have players. We're talking about skill guys. You can have offensive line guys. I think that's a great thing with what LB's doing with his offensive line work. And there's some other great offensive line people. There's a guy, Coach Ortiz in California, and a bunch of his friends, which I don't know all their names, but I've seen their stuff. They're putting guys in situations where, yes, we're teaching techniques. We're teaching the things that need to be taught. We're teaching the parameters of the game that cannot change. You have to use it. But we're teaching everything in a way that it's going to be part of the means
yes.
to solve the problem. Because the whole mindset is we're saying we're repeating the problem. I'm throwing this player in this scenario, in this learning environment, to face this problem over and over and over again, because the problem will never be the same. And then each time he's going to get to build solutions on top of solutions on top of solutions. And then even his technique, even as simple as a DB getting in his stance and jamming, he's going to be able to figure out a way to self-organize, figure out a way to have to prescribe something within his own self to whatever it is that you're doing, I'm going to do, And it's like, for me, it's just like, man, if we could just, if we could find a way to put players in those scenarios during their off seasons, during their workouts, during their drill times, even during season, if we could take independent periods, man, because it's the same thing. At the end of the day, every coach in America should be fired if we're going to say everything we've done in our independent period should transfer straight to the field and should be perfect. Because when that, when it doesn't go perfect, why are we blaming the players? Let's just look at ourselves and say we should have spent 15 more minutes doing this drill, because then it wouldn't have went wrong. So even if you were to take back, DB's back pedal, okay, you have a DB, you're telling them, I'm going to snap the ball, you go back pedal. I'm going to turn the ball to the right, you go break, you go to the right. Well, what would happen if you made that a little bit more game-like, a little bit more live, a little bit more where there was a level of chaos, a little bit of the unknown is mixed in there, where now their eyes have to react, their eyes have to, you know, their eyes have to see, their brain has to, like, okay, I gotta absorb the information, I gotta break it down, I gotta find a solution, I gotta, just that ongoing process. Now all of a sudden you could have two DBs facing each other, you're backpedaling, you're going off the other guy. You could have the coach put the ball down and just run at the guy, stick his foot and move. It doesn't have to be 1,000 miles per hour, it doesn't have to be just full-on game-like situation, but you're adding a bit of that, and now all of a sudden you're saying you want improvement, you want skill improvement, your training time, your workout time, your off-season time. It's actually doing something where it can transfer from the practice field to the game field. Because if it can't transfer to the practice field, to the stadium, then guess what? You just made that guy sweat. You just posted some cool videos online and everyone retweeted. It all served no point. And now the worst thing that's happened is the athlete's time has been stolen. Because you'll go on and you'll find another athlete, either the coach, to train, to put through workouts. You'll find another athlete to, you know, make money from, because if it's business, you have to make money, you have to pay your bills. You'll find another athlete to make money from. But that athlete, his time has now been stolen from him. And that could be the difference of how do you know that what was not accomplished in this practice led to something going wrong in a game? It could be that's why he got cut. Yeah. That's why he no longer has a job. That's why he's no longer a starter. Because, I mean, to me, the drills and all the workouts and all these different things, it's all looked at kind of as fun and games sometimes in social media world. But it's not. This is that player's life. This is his time. It doesn't matter if it's a high school kid or if it's a future Hall of Famer. That's his time. And the worst thing you can steal from a guy is his time.
Three things I want to mention, and this will set up to our last question for the day that I want to ask you about. And this has just been this is the fastest 45 minutes thus far I've ever had on a podcast. It's been great, Ross, because just flown by. And the thing is, you know, first of all, LB is LeCharles Bentley. For those of you who are wondering who LB is, any of you out there, the great New Orleans Saints center. You know, absolutely fantastic instructor, teacher, coach. And then secondarily, you know, you talked about guys in terms of, how would I best put this? You know, the way that they practice and where you're talking about practicing, a lot of it is, you worry about, well, why should we even practice at all if we're just practicing the problem? Well, part of it is that it enhances that every rep has to be intentional. It can't be robotic, because if you're not really presenting the problems and you're just teaching a solution, then it can become robotic, and that becomes part of the issue when you get on the field, is that now you're robotic and you're not really thinking, you're not practicing awareness, you're not practicing the root things that you should be doing physically, conceptually, on every play, and it becomes a robotic thing that doesn't work when you're facing people who are actually playing at that integrated level. And then that sets up my final question for today is, you know, we recently at my site, one of the ongoing things is we often talk about quarterback, and I have a former Division II quarterback who writes for me, and Mark Schofield, and, you know, a couple of guys who've coached before, and we've talked about quarterbacking, and we've used the idea of task-oriented quarterbacking versus creative, intuitive quarterbacking, and sometimes it's been displayed in the analogy recently as baker versus chef, being that, you know, the baker's the guy, when baking, you've got to follow every direction in a very precise sort of way to get the product you're looking for, whereas with cooking, you know, there's a little bit more creativity, intuitive. You adjust on the fly a little bit more to the heat of the pan, to the type of the pan that it is. You know, you're going to cook differently with an enamel than you are going to be with cast iron. You're going to cook differently, you know, on gas than you are on an electric stove versus a fire. And, you know, there's all these constant adjustments that are going on that aren't precise. And it doesn't mean that one's necessarily better than the other, though you often see that people, when they look at quarterbacking, they'll say, we want a guy like John Elway or Brett Favre or Joe Montana, or who could create in ways that the play breaks down and they were able to find a solution with a creative or intuitive thing that wasn't necessarily a part of the plan. But at the same time, you have someone like Tom Brady, who I would say is the ultimate, you know, highest level task-oriented player, who's gone through basically every iteration of what the possible play and tasks, set of tasks in front of him could bleed out. And he knows how to pick that thing based on, you know, the precision of what he does. And it doesn't mean that Tom Brady doesn't have intuition. It doesn't mean that Brett Favre doesn't have some task oriented steps that he took as, you know, but at the same time, you know, one of the conversations we had, and it centered around a guy like Patrick Mahomes, who I thought was a very intuitive, you know, creative guy. But, but the thing is the question that becomes, can you teach that intuitive skill? Because you have people who will say, well, you know, you either have that or you don't, and you can't really teach that. And my thought is you can teach that. We just haven't done enough to actually teach and enforce that enough. Or maybe the answer is we don't know whether we can teach it or not, because the system that we see reinforces task-oriented play and just hopes that they get someone who can do the intuitive once that they've proven they can do the task-oriented. And I just wonder what your thoughts are about that whole subject and whether you can teach kind of that intuitive, creative skill in people. They may not be at the highest level or ever be able to perform it at the highest levels of like a Favre, Elway, or Mahomes, or even a Doug Flutie, but it doesn't mean that you can't teach it at all and that they can't get better at it.
I think it comes down to two things. You have to look at the individual as he's authentic for who he is, and then he's an individual. Because if you do that, now you put that player under that lens where now you can do these things in practice, you can do these things during training to find out, who are you? You know, I went on another buddy of mine, Matt's podcast, his Saturday to Sunday podcast.
Matt
not
Caraccio,
too long ago.
Yeah.
And Matt's a great dude. We actually went over just who is skill. So let's just give skill, let's give it a definition of who it is, who that person is, who the individual is. Because then we get to a point where we're looking at a guy like Brett Favre, and we're no longer saying the way Brett solves this problem, the way Brett goes about this, is the way Pat Mahomes should. Because Pat's not Brett. Or the way Tom Brady does this is the way Pat should, because Pat's not Tom. And it can go all the way down to, it can be a guy who may be a third string guy, a third string quarterback in the National Football League. Well, you know, he's still one of the best quarterbacks walking the planet if he's in the league, but he's not who the next guy is. So for me, I really look at it, man, it's just like, if we can just kind of open up that lens to look at every single guy as an individual, and then we can start finding ways. Okay, why did Earl Campbell lower his shoulder and while his jersey's being ripped off his back and plow through guys? You know, why did Barry Sanders, it's funny, Sean Miska last night sent me a YouTube video of Barry in high school, and I had to watch it 3 or 4 times, and I texted him back and I told him, I'm actually cracking up while I'm watching this, because he was already doing some of the stuff that he did in the NFL back in high school, 5, 6, 7 yards away from the defender, he's already shimmying his pads, setting guys up. Well, why did Barry do that while Earl did that, while Walter Payton said, hey, you know what, guys, I'm going to jump over the huddle, while AD decided to say, hey, I'm going to plow through you, and then I'm going to do that little kind of high-step kick thing that he likes to do and do all those. What made one guy different than the other? It was just because they were in situations, man, where they were starting to figure out, this is who I am. This is how I solve this problem. Because I think if we look at it like that, then all of a sudden, everything that comes after that, it's going to be so authentic and individual to that player. Then even when now that guy starts learning the system and he starts learning the techniques needed for his position, he's now going to be able to make, he's going to be able to have ownership over that and make it his. And once it becomes his, then all of a sudden we're going to sit back and we're going to start seeing. I'll give you one example, and then I'll let you go because I know we're getting short on time. But Sean had a DB. I won't say the guy's name, but he had a DB he was working with, and the guy was just he had exceptional speed. And because he had exceptional speed, you know, most people would think, well, that's the way you want to solve the problems on the field. You can depend on your speed. And Sean started taking his speed and started putting him in situations where it's not that you're pulling his speed back, because you're still saying, hey, God blessed you with that. Use it. But he was taking that speed, and it was almost like you talked about cooking. Well, guess what? The best chef in the entire world, the best recipe that he's ever made. Now, that recipe's on paper. So if I want to learn how to make a great lasagna, I know Gordon Ramsay has a great lasagna. I can look it up. But when Gordon was preparing that lasagna, he tested it. He tried this. Ah, that's not it. I tried that. Let me add a little bit more of this. Let me take away a little bit of that. And he put the lasagna, where quote unquote, we'll act like the athlete is the lasagna. He put that lasagna in situations to say, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. I'm going to see until I feel like, yep, that's what I wanted in this moment for it to taste like. And Sean was telling me that's what he did with his DB. He said, I took his speed. And I said, let's start trying to use it different ways. Let's start putting it here and putting it there. And let's connect it to this part of your game and that part of your game. And now maybe in this situation, let's pull the speed back. You don't need to be going 100 miles an hour.
Yes.
Let's go 60 miles an hour. And all of a sudden, the recipe, the meal became so good that the guy started having tremendous success. So I think to answer your question, bro, I think it really comes down to, if we just look at each guy as an individual and we look at not only how they see, how they think, how they feel in that moment, who they are as a person, but we also look at the simplicities of, okay, what are you built like? I heard LB say that one time when he was talking about linemen and just squatting. It's like not every, you hear guys all the time, you got to squat, ass to grass, hit the floor. Well, every lineman's built differently. So time under tension for one guy is not going to be time under tension while squatting for the next guy. So even in the weight room, why don't we start looking at it as, who is this individual? How is he built? How does he move? What are his biomechanics? And then all of a sudden, we'll start putting each one of these guys to do exactly like you said. They can learn that. They can become that. Now, it may not be on the level of a Pat Mahomes, who is exceptional, God-given talent, exceptional in everything. Brett Favre, John Elway, like you said. But then all of a sudden, we may have John Doe, who's a quarterback, become the best John Doe he can be.
Yes.
And now he's reached the top of what he is.
Yeah.
That's what we should be chasing, man.
I think that is fantastic. And it's funny because it comes back down to, it's like, when you're at the top of your profession, getting people to the top of where they can go can mean that they end up being in the NFL or being a great college quarterback or being a great high school quarterback. And the point of that is that when you look at the people who are at the best in their area, it's usually those who have integrated their game with who they are, and they found their voice. The best writers, you can tell their voice, that they have a strong voice. The great musicians, is they are individual. You can tell their style. Their style is fully them, and it's no one else's. And people are trying to copy it. And people are always trying to copy the greats that they see, because there's something about that person that resonates with them and what they think they can do or want to do. Now, they may never sound exactly like them or look exactly like them, but when you look at a player, you can see a player and go, there's at least five players that are major influences in how that player moves, how he looks at problems, how he makes solutions, how he does certain things. And you can see that he watched those players or players like that, like the one that you're thinking about. So, as someone in my profession where I evaluate players and people want comparisons, it's fun to do if you keep it light, but I always try to give a spectrum of players, because It really is about, you know, you listen to, you know, you listen to musicians and they'll say, there's like 20 players I could, if you know enough mm-hmm. about those 20 players, you can say, this guy sounds like these 20 guys. And this is mm-hmm. where I can identify where he sounds like these 20 guys and incorporate them. And they can be wide ranges of people. And it may not even be the same position, you know? So
yeah.
And so I think that it is, it ultimately comes down to being the, you know, becoming the player that learning enough in a way that you can doing it in a way that's on your, not necessarily your terms, but fits within who you are so that
yeah,
that the teaching is based on who you are and you developing to being the best you are. And that makes you unique. It also makes it easier for you to learn, because if you try and teach someone, say, to just say, it can be incomplete. You know, there we have quarterbacks out there, I would give an example to, who can throw, who are very fast, but you can tell that they've been taught to run. They've just been taught, mm-hmm. you're fast, break the pocket and run. And now they're in a situation yeah. where they did that their whole career, and now they're like, they're good. They're maybe even competent NFL starters. And you look at them and go, but you know what? Somebody needed to teach them, like Sean Miska, to say, you know what, in these situations, you needed to have been learned to pull back and not run, and you needed to become more economical with how you move. And if you learned how to do that, you might actually see the field better. You might actually come up with better solutions in these situations.
There you go.
But your first response now is to try and run first and break the pocket first and put your head down first. And now you're not showing enough versatility or having enough tools in your tool belt. And, you know, I'm always, you know, I love that tool belt analogy. And Ross, this has just been a fantastic conversation, man.
No, man, I appreciate you having me on, bro. I enjoy it. As you know from all of our discussions in the past, you know, privately, I always enjoy talking with you. And, I mean,
I like to
put some stuff out and maybe ruffle some feathers, because you never know, man. Be able to make people think.
Yeah, exactly. And you certainly helped us do that today. And you've helped. You've just personally, I've been waiting for literally almost a year now to have a conversation like this with somebody about the Jalen Ramsey DeAndre Hopkins game, and it was so just on that alone was a joy for me personally. And you know, you can find Ross Cooper on Twitter at Gorilla My SCLES. So it sounds like, to me, I always see it and I think Gorilla My Muscles.
It's muscles with a Y. I had a special need kid at school who made my Twitter for me, and he would always joke in the weight room and say, years back, and he would always joke and say, we're going in there today to build gorilla muscles. And I'd say, yeah, we are, Cliff. And so he told me, well, I'm going to make you a Twitter. So he made it, and I think he meant to write muscles, and he misspelled it, but I kept it.
That's awesome. That is awesome. You can follow Ross there. And obviously, you know, thank you guys for listening to the RSP cast. You can find it at your favorite outlet. And of course, you know, please rate and review episodes. You know, if you've enjoyed it, and if you have more feedback, you can rate it there too. But you also, if you want to give me personal feedback, you can write me at MattWaldmanRSP@gmail.com. You can email me there and let me know of what you'd like to see different. Thanks again for listening, and I apologize for the construction in my back, you know, going on back here. If you hear that, hopefully it will be minimized when I edit this thing. But if you've heard it throughout, they're moving a water tower in my backyard here, and they're doing some pipe at work, and there's like huge machines in the background here. But hopefully you guys enjoyed this conversation nonetheless, and you guys have a great week.